Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It is the 18th of March. Very nice to have you with us. And I hope you have had a very pleasant morning. And hopefully we will keep that the case.
Fat chance.
All right. Let me introduce the panel to you this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok is with us, I believe. Good morning, sir.
Yo, I believe I'm here from an undisclosed and very important location.
Yeah. It's very important.
Very important. Very important. Bunker in Idaho with Cheney.
And Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to the show. It's nice to be here.
Very nice to have you with us, as always. And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here as well. Thank
Good to
you
be
very
here.
Much for being with us. All right, let's get into, we'll try to get into as little trouble as we possibly can, but we'll talk about the items in the news. And that begins with the Supreme Court and the clash between Democrats and Republicans over the nomination of Merrick Garland. So the Democrats now say they have a plan. They've begun to lay out an aggressive strategy to get Judge Merrick Garland considered by the Senate and seated on the Supreme Court over what appears to be fierce, unmovable Republican opposition. The approach, which is being implemented in part by a well-organized group led by former aides to President Obama, involves targeting vulnerable GOP Senate incumbents for defeat by portraying them as unwilling to fulfill the basic duties of their office. The idea is to threaten the Republican Senate majority that party leaders will reconsider blocking hearings on Garland's nomination. So, Alan, I have two words, or I have two questions for you. One, this strategy seems to make an awful lot of sense. Do you agree, number one? And number two, don't you think this would have occurred to the senators prior to this?
I think that they are in such trouble that they don't know what to do. I've said it before. These guys now are two-year-olds stomping their feet, and there's no controlling them. In other words, this is really a bad spot for them. Their money is coming from the Kochs and the other people, and the idea of giving up that 5-4 on the Supreme Court is too much for them. They just can't get over it. So they're hoping against hope that whoever their candidate is, it looks like, unbelievably, it's going to be, for them, it's going to be Ted Cruz. You have Lindsey Graham this morning coming over. He hates Cruz. He's made that clear in the past, and now he's for him. So they don't know what to do. They're in a very bad spot. And so the Democrats are just riding it home to victory. They are saying, okay, we're going to do what we're supposed to do. We're going to meet with them. All you have to do, Republicans, all you have to do is vote them down. But they don't want to do that either, because that puts them in a bad spot, because it's indefensible since they all voted for them. So I guess that's what I wanted to say. And yes, I think it's the right strategy for the Democrats.
Politically, certainly, should work out for them. However, there's really nothing in the Constitution that says they have to vote. In other words, it comes down to advice and
consent.
Yeah. And so the question is, have they already done that by saying, look, we're not going to vote on this guy?
We advise that you not nominate anybody.
Right. When they were framing, I think it's Article 2, when they were framing this, there were two competing ideas, as I understand it. And Stephen Gottlieb, who's a regular contributor to the station and probably listening right now, can email us and tell us. But there was a guy named Gorham who set up the advice and consent in Massachusetts. And so for the governor. And so the governor had the right to appoint. The legislative body could advise and consent. Now, James Madison wanted it to be a straight Senate veto. So in other words, the president could put somebody out there. There had to be an up or down vote. They fought this out. And basically, it was decided that Gorham's plan, which was much more nebulous, would allow for the politics, would actually allow for the politics to play out as they are now.
Well, a little constitutional history this morning
there you
from
go.
Ray.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, I am just delighted that Ray is with us and that Ray, has prepared for this. It's nonsense, of course. That doesn't mean I don't love you, Ray.
Well,
but
in what way? In what factual way, sir, is it nonsense?
It's nonsense in that there is a spirit to the Constitution.
I see.
And excuse me, just let me finish this one little sentence, and then you go.
Okay.
Okay. And that is, there's a spirit to this Constitution. If the Republicans, if it were the other way around, and it has been, they'd be yelling, "All we want is a vote, up or down, up or down." And that's what the American people want by 2/3, as mentioned by Barack Obama. So it's not only, you know, a little bit of a digit of a history thing here. It's what's right. And what's right here is you give the guy a chance. You know, we've been sitting there, many of us who are appalled by what the Supreme Court has been doing for all these years. Now, for those people on the other side of the street, it's our turn.
Do we have any guarantee, even if this goes to a vote, that they would just not confirm him out of spite?
Well, there's the problem, Joe, and I think that this is clear, that they've got all those Senate seats to defend. They can't defend them. They don't know how to do it because the way to do it is say, well, we're not going to even consider this. Let's just say one of these guys who's up for office, Grassley, for example, votes no. That could cost them his election, they don't want to do that.
Do you think, Chris, that in fact the American public cares that much that this will swing elections?
No, I don't think it'll swing elections. I mean,
I'm with you.
Maybe a little bit at the really, really close race, a little bit at the margins, maybe. But generally, no, I don't really think so.
Don't you think it just goes to further disgust everyone about the political process on both sides?
Yes,
definitely. Absolutely.
And I think, because I think a lot of us realize that Democrats would be doing the exact same thing if the shoe was on the other foot. It's just this, they're just playing politics.
And the president was absolutely right by saying, the American voters have already spoken. They elected me in 2012. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing what he feels he has to do. And there's certainly a political aspect to it, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But doesn't it seem, and I apologize for being, you know, idealistic this morning, but doesn't it seem a shame that you put up a candidate, that it's a president's obligation to put forth a name. He puts forth a name, but by most accounts, at least, a qualified jurist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that could possibly go by the wayside just because of some...
For now.
Well,
they all voted for him, Ray. Every one of them voted for him when he was up for confirmation as the chief judge in that circuit.
10 years ago.
Right, but all I'm saying is McConnell, in what he said the other day, was any candidate, this is not the right time. And so what he's saying is, I don't think he was saying that this guy doesn't have a chance.
Well, no, he is in the sense that he is saying that he doesn't have a chance because he's not going to move the nomination. Yeah, but what are you going to move?
Well, it could sit there for quite a while. It could sit there for a long time.
Well, they would move it in November if the election doesn't go their way, wouldn't they? I mean, in a hurry to make sure
you're right.
Yeah.
And then we were bringing this up yesterday, but then at what point do you then withdraw the nomination because it would be lame duck and it should be on the next president's watch?
Mm-hmm.
And you get into all of those issues as well.
I mean, the Republicans are definitely gambling. I mean, this obviously could backfire. They could end up with a Supreme Court nominee if Hillary wins, who's much more liberal than this guy. So,
and two more, Chris, two more after that, because, you know, no matter what, as I said yesterday, God has term limits, and some of those people are very old.
So you're predicting death for a couple?
There is nothing so sure as death and taxes.
Well, you are correct, sir. Certainly taxes.
So, meanwhile, the nominee has gone, is going to Capitol Hill, and he is knocking on doors, and Democrats are meeting with him, and I don't know what exactly that does other than show them up. Yep. I guess the optics are good.
Well, I mean, you know, I saw the picture of Pat Leahy sitting
yes.
there with him and having a nice conversation with him. It was perfect. It was not, you know, I mean, what's so bad about meeting with a person and talking to him and listening to him, especially when you voted for him when he was confirmed for the circuit court? Doesn't make any sense. And by the way, I want to argue with both of you, with the two of you, Chris and whatever your name is.
Ray.
Oh, yeah, Ray. And that. And
I'm
my
here 19 years.
And, And my argument is this.
He can't see your name tag from his undisclosed location.
Hello, my name is Ray. Glad to meet you. All right, go ahead.
One out of, you know, here's the point that when you both agree with each other that the American people don't care. They don't have to care by that much.
Well, you
know, most elections are won or lost by 5%. And when you're talking about 5%, you are talking about a landslide. We describe presidential elections, which somebody beats somebody else by 5%, as a landslide. If you get 5% of the American people who are angry about this, and I think you will, then I think, you know, the Republicans are in some real trouble, and the Senate could go Republican.
Democrat.
Oh, you're so right. Could go, as in leave the room and say, bye-bye, I'm gone. I go. You come here.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's true, but I still think the presidential race, you know, I think that will overwhelm this issue. I think most people, especially if there's a guy like Trump at the top of the Republican ticket, I mean, I kind of see this getting a little bit lost in the shuffle.
What? You mean this? The Supreme Court?
Yeah, this particular, should they consider a nominee or not? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I think that those on the political left are going to make sure that the public doesn't forget about this, and the campaign has already begun.
Yeah. Well, Republicans must have some sort of polling or some sort of information that suggests this is good for them. Otherwise,
do they even look at that sort of thing, or do they just throw it down?
They must. There must be some strategy that isn't clear to the rest of us.
I don't know. I mean, any paper, any numbers I've seen seem to be very, very clear, as Alan has indicated. But I mean, to Alan's point and to what the two of you were saying earlier, if it starts to affect the Senate campaigns and it starts to affect even state campaigns, it doesn't that kind of take over? Is that going to not take over the narrative at some point and bleed into the election, the presidential election?
Yeah, I think it will. I've made that clear. I just wonder whether the Koch brothers are on the phone, working the phones right now.
And
the other part of what you just said, Ray, is a point, or somebody just said it. Yeah, I think Ray said it. And that is, if in fact they are getting political advice, which is you will lose in the next primary you run if you give in. So now you have, am I going to lose to a more radical Republican as opposed to losing to a general electorate?
That's the thing. I mean, I think that's probably what they're doing, is trying to play to their base more than trying to play to the middle. I mean, and you know, if you're going to win a Senate campaign, getting out your base is a pretty key strategy.
But in November, the key is going to be and this is why I think Democrats are fearful of Trump, because he's energizing people who haven't voted before. So at the radio station, on any given issue, those who generally write to us with the most anger or frustration are those who are probably on the political fringes on either side. So and this is why I think it's a gamble for the Democrats to push this very hard, because if they get their way and there is a confirmation hearing, it will infuriate those on the hard right and maybe inspire more people to come out to the polls, and potentially could change the election in a way that the Democrats are not seeing.
Who cares about the number of people on the hard right, because there aren't that many of them? That's my view.
There are in some of these states that, you know, in Iowa, places like that. I mean, there is an intense Republican base that would be furious if they confirmed somebody. And if those people stay home, a guy like Grassley could lose on that front.
Well, I think Grassley, you guys were probably right. Grassley will probably win. But this could really cost them. And they have put up, the Democrats are signaling, this is not going to be the usual way we do our politics. We're really going to try to beat you here. We're going to bring up the lieutenant governor, or former lieutenant governor, who's extremely popular in the state, and he's got to be sweating right now. And as I say, a couple of percentage points and you're gone.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will get a letter or two, and then we'll go to our news break at the bottom of the... Oh, you just want to wait till the bottom? Okay.
Well, the engineer's now telling you what to do?
No. I'm just asking for consensus.
Oh, now he says whatever you want to do. All right. Well played, Rob.
We'll take a break, Rob, and we'll be right back.
slaughter a pig to get that image out of my head. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. Let's go to a couple letters, Alan. We have about 2 minutes before we have to go to another break.
Okay. So we have heard from Douglas. I'm having a little trouble in my undisclosed place. Okay, here it is. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here's why. Let's assume a Republican-controlled Senate for the next 12 years with Democratic president for the same length of time. If during that time, let's say, six more justices died and the Republican Senate refused to vote on any Supreme Court nominee for the entire time, does Ray still think that that's right? That's their right?
I'm not saying anything's right or wrong, but I think the Constitution doesn't specify. In other words, congressional statute specifies the number of Supreme Court justices. There could be one. The Supreme Court says precisely nothing on it. I mean, the Constitution says precisely nothing on the number of justices allowed. The Congress
you know what?
Would have to change that.
You know what, Ray? The Constitution is a living, breathing document. And by this time, I think we all know what our expectations of our legislators and others are.
Well,
you might be right on a technicality.
But that's what the Constitution's about. That's the difference between a liberal and a conservative.
Liberal
says, well, it's whatever I think it is today.
Until it's convenient, Ray, and that's what they do. Anyway.
Ah, interesting.
Anyway, Don says, the most hypocritical statement of the month, let the people decide by Mitch McConnell. See what I mean?
Well, the president said they already did. They elected me in 2012.
All right. Again and again, we see people writing to us about, I think, giving you the other side of that one, Ray. You may have found a historical asterisk that you think supports your point. But anyway, so GWK says, on Tuesday night, Marco Rubio pulled out of the race after losing the Florida primary to Trump by almost 20 points, but he still has a great story. I mean, nothing symbolized America more than the son of poor immigrants growing up to run for president and being crushed by a billionaire.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back, BBC News, and then we'll return to the panel with Ray, Chris, and Alan. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, and Chris Churchill join us on the program this morning. Very nice to have you, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan, we started the letter process. Let us continue.
Peter says, the right of the people to weigh in is contained in the very nature of, quote, advise and consent. And has nothing to do with the next election. That's what Peter says. And then Anne says, if the shoe were on the other foot and our senators were behaving in this way regarding a Supreme Court nomination, I would express my frustration to them vociferously. However, I would be unlikely to vote for a Republican as a result of this. I expect Republican voters will feel the same. You know, Anne and everybody else, I have a different feeling about that. I think that the Republican Party, that the moderates in the Republican Party have been robbed of their party. And I think they're pretty angry about it. And as a result, I think this is going to be an issue which will have them saying, you know, what is happening here isn't right. That's my bet on it. You guys, what do you think?
I don't know. Are there any moderates left in the party at this point?
Well, I think so.
I think you hit on something here that we'll see play out. And if Trump doesn't get the nomination, it'll play out very fast. And maybe even if he does, I think you're going to see another conservative party, if not this election, then very soon, which will get a lot of people who are not happy with the Republican Party.
Every time we've had a third party in American politics, Ray, it's been a disaster for the split off, the group they split off from.
You're right.
And that's why I thought that Bloomberg really was a hero in saying that even though he wanted to be president, and it's quite clear he does, that he wasn't going to do it because he said it would hand the election to the people on the far right. Or to Trump, or to Cruz. And I'm fascinated by the fact that people like Lindsey Graham, who just don't like Cruz, which I consider not to be hard, are giving up and saying, okay, I'm going to support him now. One wonders what that backroom negotiation looked like.
Well, do they have a choice at this point? I mean, what are they supposed to do? They're not going to go with Trump, so...
I don't know.
I mean, I think if you think that Trump as I tend to do, is just fundamentally unfit for the presidency, then what choice do you have?
Well, he may be unfit, but we live in a democracy, small d, right? He's gotten an awful lot of votes.
He's
primary votes.
He's gotten 35% of the primary votes. 65% have gone against him.
Well, I'm so sorry. Let's just see what happens when there's a heads up.
Yeah.
You're assuming that 65% is all people who don't want Trump as opposed to Cruz. I think you're wrong. I think Cruz is in many ways for a liberal more dangerous. And I happen to
because
think
he's more competent. I don't
Not because it's more competent. Come on now, Ray.
All right.
No, I think what happens is that Cruz is so far over to the right that he has choose the middle class and the middle of the roaders, better than middle class, who are likely to go either for Hillary or for the Republican. In the case of Trump, he could win because he has a lot of those votes, whereas Cruz isn't going to get them.
I don't think. I mean, Trump's unpopularity numbers are close to 70%, and they're even higher than that with women. I mean, there's just it's very hard to see how he wins in a general election with those kind of numbers, unless he can somehow convince this great bulk of people that he's actually a great guy after all. It's hard to see.
Well, Chris, you have a much more important podium than I do. You do. You are the featured columnist for the Albany Times Union.
Here's the shot. We're ready for it. Here comes the shoe. Ready. All right, just sit back
and
relax.
No. We're just going to have
I'll
to see.
I'll help you with the armor, Chris.
Is there a helmet?
We're just going to have to see how this plays out. That's all.
Yeah.
We're going to have to see how this plays out. You know, I can say and you can say and we'll see. I'm telling you there's a certain amount of evidence that there is, you know, we're now seeing, for example, that the that white males are not for Hillary. Mm-hmm. Did you see that story? We just saw it.
I did see it.
Yeah. And so I'm fascinated by that. So where do you think those white males are going to go in a general election? Now, I'm not talking about all white males. I'm white. Joe's white. But I think that it is very white.
Thank you, and large.
And I think that the possibility is that
more white. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, more white because you're bigger.
Yeah.
You're a tall guy.
You're like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It's funny.
And so I think that really tells you a lot about the way this election could play
what
out.
Are you, by the way, Ray? Oh. You weren't even brought up in that conversation.
I'm as white as Burl Ives, buddy boy.
Yeah, me too. Should we take off our shirts? Have a contest?
All over the Northeast, people are scratching their heads and say, now who is Burl Ives again?
Yeah.
Oh, the big rock candy mountain. Oh, the buzzing of the bees in the cigarette trees.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I hated him.
Yeah, they all know Frosty the Snowman.
Right.
There you go.
All right, well, let's end the show.
I'm lost. I'm totally lost.
Yeah.
Okay,
time to leave.
John says,
isn't it hypocrisy for the Republican Party to say that the people should pick the next Supreme Court judge, yet they oppose the candidate that their members seem to prefer? John from Gilderland. And Robert says, several of my Albany neighbors, who were proud Republicans a few years ago, have announced they are now independents. When asked why, they mostly say they didn't recognize their party anymore.
Well, that's what I meant when I said, are there any moderates left? I mean, a lot of them have left. You know, they're...
Yeah, but they're natural... Well, my point is, Chris, that they're natural Republican voters. They identified as Republicans. We had Nelson Rockefeller. We had Jake Javits. We had, you know, so many of these people who have more... I interviewed Tedesco, who is a bona fide, terrific Republican the other day. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get him to say that he would support Trump. Couldn't get him to do it. I think he will. He says things like, I'll support the nominee of the party. But in fact, they don't want to do it because their constituency is being lost. Well,
do you think, Alan, that in days of old, you would say the Republicans fall in line behind the candidate in the general? Do you think that this year is going to be an exception if Trump wins the nomination?
Well, look at Barry Goldwater. I mean, there's a pretty good example of what happened. The guy gets slaughtered. Because of some of the right wing positions that he took, devil may care. Later on in life, he got a little religion on all of this stuff. But I think what happens is if you see the electorate in three parts, Democrats, middle, and Republicans, it is the middle that always determines who wins. And in this case, I think the Democrats are licking their chops now. That's why I think, I've always thought that Trump is more, and I've said it again and again, that Trump is more dangerous to the Democrats than Cruz. I think the Democrats politically are a lot better off with Cruz.
To go to your question, Ray, I think there are a lot of Republicans who would prefer 4 years of Hillary to a Trump presidency. Hmm. You know, I think a lot of them would stay home.
Well, anyway, you may be right. My usual Matt from UC says, Ray is always prepared. Alan, not so much.
Ouch.
More fumbling and bumbling.
That's Matt not from nice. Matt, be nice.
Matt from UC. And EJ says, Alan is awesome. There Yay. You go. Just my weekly notice that Alan rocks. Love you, man. You're the best.
Signed, Alan.
From an undisclosed location.
Okay. Yeah. I think Alan is great.
Oh, God. okay. Gary says, elderly constitution, elderly life, long liberal here, but I think Alan should answer Ray's question about the Senate's actual responsibility, Reeve Scotus nominee. Certainly say something more than the Constitution is a living document. I don't think that's the best answer to most of these kinds of questions. It's true and important, but we also need to know and address the actual content. All right, thank you for that. Please, Ray, says John. P-U-H-L-E-E-Z-E. Oh, please, Ray. The conservatives on the court loosely interpret the Constitution as much as the other judges, whenever it's convenient for them. We've been in an era of juristic diarrhea for decades now from both sides.
All right, wash and wear conservatism. I'll grant you that.
Okay, so then, do you want more, Joe, or what do you want?
I want a minute and 40 seconds more, please.
Okay.
Peter says, the right of the people to weigh in is contained in the very nature of advice and consent. It has nothing to do with the next election. I think we read that one already. Yeah. And I'm going back to the beginning here. Oh, and Joshua, you know, this is what happens now. We mentioned something that is not completely related to what we're doing, and everybody jumps on it. And so here comes Joshua. Dear Round Table, Burl Ives sang Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, not Frosty the Snowman.
No, he didn't sing it, but in the special, he was the snowman.
Oh, no, that was Jimmy Durante. He was the snowman.
Yeah, he was the snowman in
Rudolph.
Yeah, but he was the snowman.
But it wasn't Frosty.
Well, it was Burly.
And Joni's in on it, too. Burl Ives played Rufus Hennessy, who shot his son, played by Chuck Connor, in The Big Country. Just saying.
That's also true. Okay, now we have IMDb for Burl Ives, ladies and gentlemen.
Tomorrow it's C.W. McCall on the round table. Looks like we got us a convoy.
But the last thing is that...
Ruth Buzzy, ladies and gentlemen. What?
But the last thing is Burl Ives did do House Un-American Activities Committee and Pete. That's what the left of the folk singing movement will always remember him
for. They hugged it out after 50 years.
They did.
It was
they
fine.
Did. You want more?
Nope.
Okay, more. After the election, he may get a hearing if Hillary wins. Easy peasy. But Trump will win, so maybe Garland goes away. Dr. Jim.
Let's take a break there, and we'll come back with more. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. And a reminder, roundtable at WAMC.org is where you can write to us, and we would love to hear from you. And let us go to some other topics here in our few minutes that we have left, about 12 or 13 minutes. Let's go to other things. We'll talk about, there we go. Let us talk about the Michigan governor. Tells Congress that he was misled on the Flint water situation. Rick Snyder of Michigan acknowledged in a tense congressional hearing Thursday that he had been aware of complaints about drinking water in Flint, including from news reports his aides had emailed him, yet he had accepted assurances, he said, that the problems were not severe. Democrats listening to his testimony were dubious. Governor Snyder, plausible deniability only works when it's plausible, said Representative Matt Cartwright, a Democrat of New York. You were not in a medically induced coma for a year. And that was sort of the tenor of yesterday's hearing.
Well, yes, and I remember that that was the Republican governor getting it from the Democrats, and then the other way around, you had the head of the EPA getting her comeuppances from the Republicans who said terrible things about her.
Yeah, so it's more politics. It's more of what we were talking about earlier than with the Supreme Court nomination, right? It's just completely partisan, and the way you view the situation is which side of the aisle you fall on. And
which side are you on? Yeah.
A sitting Republican governor appearing before a Republican-led congressional panel answering wave after wave of questions about his administration's role in the Flint water crisis, which is represented of Brendan Boyle of Pennsylvania, said the most glaring failure of government since Hurricane Katrina. So how does the governor of Michigan come out of this?
The buck has to stop somewhere. It's usually at the top, right? So how's he getting out of this?
I don't know.
He's not entirely, but he did get bad advice from the EPA, too. I think that's been established. I think they're both to blame. I think he obviously could have done a lot more, and the EPA could have done a lot more, too. I mean, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around.
Politics are one thing, but ultimately a tragic situation, and that you cannot forget.
Right, and yeah, he's the elected official, so he's the one who ultimately will be, you know, held to account.
That's always the case, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing you don't have to worry about is if you ever say anything really, really bad in your column in the Times Union, Rex is going to have to take the heat.
Right, and likewise here, if Joe and I start swearing, it's Alan's fault, really.
You bet. Yeah, it's true.
All right, let's go to...
What about the legislature? You know, the Democrats in the House, in the Assembly, are putting up this phony, Maloney, dumb ethics revision, which is just so pathetic, knowing that they have to do something, they're doing garbage. And I have to say that if I read the email correctly, at least one major group who were there to hold these people's feet to the fire is saying, oh, that's a good start. I am going to throw up.
This is in New York State?
Yes. Yeah. The Assembly, the boss of the Assembly is Boss Hastie. He used to be the boss of the Bronx. Now he's the boss of the Assembly. He's the speaker. And they elected him to take the place of Shelley Silver. And they knew what they were doing when they did it, and he's taking the heat for them, and he's coming up with things like the governor says nobody should be allowed to make more than $11,000 or $12,000 on the outside, because we all know why they get that money, because people want to curry influence. They say no, they should get something like 3/4 of what a Supreme Court judge does, which brings it up to $79,000. Why would a Supreme Court judge? I get that. I don't get that at all. Does anybody else? Well, this is what we come to expect from these people. Silence. Silencio.
Chris, you want to weigh in on?
Well, I haven't been following it that closely, to be honest. But, I mean, ethics in New York State legislature, what do you expect?
It's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. I just thought I'd yell a little bit.
I like that.
Nobody else seems to care.
You have 7.5 more minutes if you want to keep going.
Okay. Everyone's like going through their stories. Like, was that one? No, okay, I got it. All right.
I don't need stories. You see, that's the whole point. I'm consistently, as has been pointed out today, unprepared.
All right. Okay. We're...
Denise says Snyder claims that he was misled by his subordinates. Pity nobody on the panel asked him who he fired for misleading him. As far as the news reports go, that would be no one. Well, we have already heard that he feels that the EPA should have done more. Mm. And then Matt says, the move to change Flint's water system was 100% the decision of the Snyder administration and their appointed administrator, blaming the EPA for not noticing they'd salvaged a previously clean and pure water system is like blaming the dog catcher when your vicious, unchanged dog bites the mailman. Don't you see?
Yep.
And Laura says, hello, all.
Hi.
If Trump wins nomination, he will veer left so hard we will all get whiplash. Donald Trump has no problem contradicting Donald Trump. It's all about votes for the Donald.
Right, but if he does that, then the Republican base stays home and he loses. So,
right.
I mean, why would if he veers to the left, what's the difference between him and Hillary at that point?
You make a point. Although people, you know, they have to make choices. People have to make choices. There are three choices. You know what they are. Stay home, as you've indicated, mm-hmm. Vote Democratic or vote Republican. I think I still am the one who thinks that Trump is far more dangerous and could become the president than Cruz is, for exactly those reasons. And Bruce says, anyone on the panel seems to be voicing the opinion that Donald Trump is unfit to be president. Nevertheless, he currently has the plurality of convention delegates. I don't understand, therefore, that anybody can say he's unqualified in a democracy, small d, if the people say he is. And that's Bruce from Johnstown. And, okay.
I didn't say he was unqualified.
Oh, okay.
I will. He is unqualified.
Well, but, I mean, what's qualification? I mean,
I think I said unfit. He doesn't have the temperament that you want in a president.
Agreed
he doesn't
that.
Seem to be fully in touch with reality. He screams and yells. He encourages violence. He's an authoritarian. So, he's going to be not an authoritarian.
Well, I think he's shows a tendency to sort of swing with the prevailing breeze.
Yeah, but he also has a lifetime of behaving a certain way. It's kind of hard to change your personality when you're almost 70 years old, I think.
Is he 70?
Yes.
He's not gray.
Wonder how that happens.
That's interesting, yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Must have talked to Lucille Ball's people.
Never noticed that. Or Gail Gordon.
All right, we shouldn't talk about the hair. We apologize, okay. Mr. Future President. We're sorry.
Yeah. Well, you'll be hearing, if he wins, you'll be hearing from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Ombudsman, schmombudsman.
Oh, boy. Joe, you're still in charge of this program.
Am I? Okay. I just wanted to make sure, just checking the notification. All right, let's go to the, here's a story I want to talk about. Let's talk about SeaWorld for a second. SeaWorld ends captive breeding program and says that the current batch of killer whales will be the last. So basically what they're doing is they're phasing this out. And I will say I was a little surprised yesterday on All Things Considered. They had both the Humane Society and SeaWorld on together talking about the deal that they struck, and they both worked this out. It seems to be a deal that has long been in the works following a death of a SeaWorld employee that's kind of started this after years of the Humane Society complaining about these killer whales being bred in captivity and saying this may not be a good idea. And now SeaWorld is ending its captive breeding program for the orcas. Meanwhile, the killer whales in its care will be the last generation of the orcas at SeaWorld. So as they pass on, that program will then go away as well. The company said Thursday that it's ending all orca breeding immediately, putting an end to the practice that animal rights activists have called inhumane. And it's already been prohibited by officials in California. And again, this comes after a very critical documentary, Blackfish, which spotlighted the animals' living conditions. And SeaWorld announced also, I believe in San Diego, that they would end its killer whale shows there altogether.
Attendance apparently took a big hit after Blackfish came out, and I think that's probably what's driving this mostly, you know. I mean, but this is great. This is progress. Whales don't belong in swimming pools. I think that's an optimistic great thing. It's just like it's similar with the elephants in the circus too,
right?
You know, it's a very similar move.
I have a tough time reconciling the philosophy of zoos in general. They seem to be sad places, but I guess there are reasons to.
Right, and they can be sad places, but there are humane ways to keep animals in captivity, and then there are inhumane ways. And a whale, which, you know, travels thousands of miles in the natural world, you know, to put it in a swimming pool essentially is obviously inhumane, in my opinion.
And then I agree. And then making it, you know, and then training it and doing all these
right.
things, and obviously a great risk to the trainers. And they're huge animals that can do a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of safety questions put into play.
Of course, SeaWorld, I assume they're going to keep the dolphins and the other things that comprise their shows. And I think the pressure will move.
Have you ever been to SeaWorld?
Oh, I have not.
I have not. No.
All right. So I've been to SeaWorld twice, and I've seen this Shamu show twice, and both times they had to halt it in the middle because the killer whale like went off the rails. Like they would
in
have it in
way?
The back. Well, they had it like in a holding pen, And then it was, there was some sort of, there is a reason which I don't want to get into here on the program, but I don't know. Do whales go in heat? But something like that.
Oh, okay.
Something of that.
He had developed his shine for... yeah. Okay,
very educational.
Yes.
Okay, look at the time. Oh, boy.
Alan, are you still on the air?
No, I'm here. I'm here. I'm here and could say something provocative, but I won't.
Good for you. Good for you, sir.
Yeah, and the reason we asked was because there was a little fluttering there for a second, and we didn't know if you were still with us. That's all
right. No, I'm here. I'm here and strangely silent.
Okay. All right, anybody, we have 20 seconds.
No, the whale and heat got me. I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for that.
I have pictures.
Okay, that's it. I'm done, really.
Put them on the website.
Yeah, we'll do that.
WAMC.org.
Chris Churchill.
I ain't going there.
Yeah, Chris Churchill, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. Raymond, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Alan, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.